Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I guess first of all, I have to give the mandatory cautionary statement, as we all do. So before I begin, I just want to draw your attention. We will be making forward-looking statements, and for a full disclosure of the risks, et cetera, associated with that, please refer to either our AIF or annual report. Thank you. Okay, now to get on with it. I'm actually here to talk about today about gold. Oops, let me take that back one. Talk to you about gold. And it's a pleasure to talk about the one truly precious metal. Gold has played an important role in history and customs for thousands of years. It was our first real currency, and the gold standard was the basis of most developed countries' currencies until very recently. Gold rushes have helped develop many regions around the world, and certainly here in Australia, some important ones being Ballarat and Kalgoorlie. Wars have been fought for it. In a couple of weeks, our Olympians will strive for it. Kings are crowned in it. Gold jewelry marks important milestones of our lives, and central banks still use it as a monetary base. Gold has a place in history as the one eternal store of value, not because of a promissory note by a government, but because its own value based on beauty, nobility, workability, and rarity. So it is still a very relevant material. In 2007, we saw gold move to 27-year highs before setting new records in 2008 of over $1,000 an ounce. Now, we've come off of that slightly, but we believe that the bull market for gold is still firmly in place, and I'm going to get into why we believe that. The current bull market is now in its seventh year, but really the material buildup of the price of over 500 happened only about 2.5 years ago. So that's actually fairly short in terms of a commodity cycle. So we're still believing we're well early or mid of the cycle. And there's a good reason to be optimistic about the future of gold. While there are a number of short-term factors that certainly cause some price volatility, our positive outlook for gold is based on a number of longer-term trends. Firstly, we're seeing the reemergence of core inflation as a result of higher food prices and fuel prices around the world rising quite sharply. As everyone's aware, oil is now well over $100 a barrel, and world food prices have been in the news recently for their massive rises in the last little while. And this is coming at a time where the American economy is really quite weak. And interest rates are also very low, including negative real interest rates in the United States, which I don't think we've seen in a long, long time. Gold has traditionally performed very well in times of low interest rates or emerging inflationary periods, but it has been decades since those two have occurred at the same time. So it really is a confluence of occasions that bodes very well for gold. The falling U.S. dollars, we've heard our nickel friend lamenting over the fall of the U.S. dollar, but it has been positive for gold prices. And with the structural debt problems, the U.S. dollar is really losing some of its appeal as a reserve currency. And I think there's been reports of 1.3 trillion U.S. dollars in the People's Bank of China right now. And that is a real issue for the U.S. dollar. And this has certainly caught the attention of not only, obviously, the People's Bank of China, but central banks and institutions. And they really only need to increase their investment in gold by a very small amount, and it can have a very substantial impact on the gold price. All of this is supporting strong investment demand. And while the poor economic climate in the U.S. may ease some of the U.S. trade deficit, it will be very negative to their actual account balances and their spiraling debts. So again, those are all very positive from a gold price perspective. Longer term, we believe that supply-demand fundamentals for gold are very compelling. Essentially, we have declining mine supply from a variety of factors, and physical demand is being fueled by rapid growing economies, in particularly China and India. China and India alone account for 40% of global consumer demand for gold, and they obviously, as everyone knows, have had the highest GDP growth rates recently. On the supply side, global mine production has decreased by 6% since 2001, and there's been very, very few new gold discoveries, despite a doubling of the gold price. So there's some fundamental issues with the supply side of gold that I think are going to be with us for quite a while. So again, mine production is down 6% since 2001, another 0.4% this year. Official sector sales have continued, but since the central bank sales agreement, those really have been fairly controlled. And I'll get into a few of the other facts in this in a second, but you'll see it's not probably all that significant. Old gold scrap sales have decreased significantly, and I guess that's probably a basis that was a big issue a couple of years ago, and we've probably just run out of gold scrap in many areas. So total supply is down 1.7% year on year, and overall the gold supply is certainly decreasing. The other aspects of the gold supply, if we start looking at world gold production, you can see the light versus the darker blue. The gold production from the traditional South Africa, U.S., Australia, and Canada has decreased significantly from a peak of over 1,000 tons a year to now, you know, more in the range of about 700 tons per year, while emerging economies have picked up, you know, the big chunk of the gap there. So while the gold production is decreasing, it is certainly decreasing more in the stable first world countries, if you'll call it that. One of the things that kind of highlights the other side of it, which is China. Mine production in China has increased by more than 13% in 2007 to just over 280 tons of gold per year. With further strong growth projected for 2008, China's position as the world's largest gold producer is now very solidly in place. So that's, you know, that's a big structural change from a few years ago. Just another one, just to kind of hit on the demand side, and you can see there now, since 2002, the increase in demand for jewelry in China, in this case, 23% demand increase in 2007. So again, as the GDP of those countries increase, the traditional gold jewelry purchasing countries, as their GDP increases, the demand for gold, jewelry definitely goes with that, and we're seeing that in the market. Another one that's been of a lot of discussion in the news and whatnot has been the impact of producer hedging, and you can see that since about 2002, most of the producers, or the major producers, have actually been in a situation of de-hedging for the last 5 to 8 years, and that, of course, is having a positive impact on the market, as we have to buy up gold to supply into those hedges. And if you compare the de-hedging at about 400 tons to the central bank sales at about 400 tons, that probably almost balances those two supply and demand factors. So, you know, clearly the de-hedging easily makes up for the impact of central bank sales. The other one that's new into the market and has been somewhat controversial, I guess, particularly for the major producers, because of the idea that investors are somewhat investing in exchange-traded funds as opposed to shares or equities. But it's worthy putting up this on the thing. Our belief as a company, I guess, is that while this does somewhat form a competitive investment avenue for gold and gold bugs, it does certainly add to the demand for physical metal. And you can see here over the last 3 or 4 years that there's been over 800 tons of gold that is now held in these exchange-traded funds. So it is, again, structurally changing the market, but I think for the positive. So where do we fit into this as a gold producer? Barrick today is the world's largest gold producer. We're also the largest gold producer in the Australia Pacific region. And, you know, about 50% of our production actually comes from 50% of our 2 million or so ounces a year in this region comes right out of WA. So we're also the biggest gold producer in WA. So I think we're probably, of anybody, reasonably qualified to talk about gold in this country, in the state. Last year we produced just over 8 million ounces of gold. And this year we're targeting gold production of about 7.6 to 8.1 million ounces. And of that, about 1.9 to 2 million of that will come from the Australian Pacific region. We also have the largest reserve bases on the world's best gold trends. Our operating and mine building track records give us confidence that we're a good company to manage the risks and the gold market of today. And we've done all of this in just 25 years. Our company is only 25 years old. We have a project pipeline that is the deepest in the industry with long life assets, positioning us well for strength in the long run. Our team is made up of about 20,000 people from around the world, and today our market cap is just over $40 billion, with 27 operating mines on over four continents. We have an A-rated balance sheet, which enables us to move our vision forward and continue to build our future projects without the need for equity injection. All this adds up to a fairly low-risk, leveraged play of gold through the largest reserves, the largest production, and great participation in the gold price increase. Let me talk a little bit about that. I guess, again, what's this business about? From a producer perspective, it's about margin. It's about earnings. 5 years ago, we focused on our strategy to position Barrick to benefit from the emerging bull market. With the acquisition of Placer Dome 2.5 years ago, we reached a critical mass, bringing us global size and scale to operate effectively around the world. The Placer acquisition also helped assemble one of the most extensive project pipelines in the world for gold. We closed all our corporate gold sales contracts, and we've continued to distinguish ourselves as a company offering investors significant leverage to the gold price. And this graph really shows this. You can see that while the costs, and like a lot of us, the costs are going up, our margin increase over the last number of years has been not only steady, but very strong to now where we have a last quarter, a $503 cash margin on a $909, so over a 50% cash margin. By selling all our products into current prevailing market prices, we are well leveraged to that gold price movement, and we believe that's the right place to be. We have de-hedged. We were one of the early and biggest de-hedgers in the last 5 years. We've constructed 5 new mines in the last couple of years on time and nearly on budget. I say nearly on budget. In this market, it's hard to get everything on budget. And we've paid cash for our 4 most recent acquisitions, including the 40% of the Cortez mine that we recently bought from Rio Tinto. With a net debt of only $2.2 billion, robust cash flow, and the gold industry's only A-rated balance sheet, we're in a strong position to fund the development of our very strong project pipeline. The other thing that is very strong for our company, and I think is, as I mentioned earlier in this thing, is a fundamental risk or issue for our industry from a supply side, is the geopolitical profile of the production. But for Barrick, 2/3 of our production comes from North America and the Australian Pacific region. So our 2 big regions are very stable regions. And just over 2/3 of our gold reserves are anchored in either North America, Australia Pacific, or Chile. So again, we're sitting probably of anybody in the strongest position of having the best political environment. This provides a strong anchor for us geopolitically and allows us to go into other areas without substantially changing the risk profile of our company. About 65% of our costs are in U.S. dollars, which provides a pretty natural hedge for us against U.S. dollars in terms of our costs. And we've actually been very effective, I think, in hedging other currencies such as the Australian dollar. This makes Barrick a relatively low-risk equity with significant leverage to gold price, particularly when you consider the depth of our pipeline. Although the industry as a whole may be challenged by the lack of new discoveries, we are well-positioned with 10 high-quality projects in our pipeline, all with geographical perspective areas with excellent exploration upside, which gives us a lot of flexibility. So I guess in closing, what I'd like to say is certainly from a supply side, gold has its challenges worldwide. We're looking at in a situation where I believe we're all fairly bullish. Most of the big gold companies are fairly bullish on the gold price because of those fundamentals that I've laid out. We don't predict where the gold price is going. Our job is to produce gold at the best price, but certainly our actions indicate very clearly where we think the trend is going to be. And of those companies that are out there, Barrick, the biggest, in the best financial situation with the best project pipeline to certainly take advantage of what we see as a good market going forward. Thank you very much.